part of it was also the skinheads, the skinhead movement. You know, the rise of the right wing of the the punk, the Nazi punks in England. But there's also a little bit of resonance with the Who, because the Who kind of did the same thing before. Like the Who had Tommy, who was deaf, dumb, and blind because his dad was killed in the war. His dad, remember, you know, 21's going to be a good year. You know, I'm not saying it's necessarily true, but the Who is about a song. Tommy's about a fictitious story of a man that went off to fight in World War One, and then he came back, and when he came back, he found his wife cheating with a guy, and the guy who was cheating with his wife kills the soldier. So the soldier dies in a love battle, and you know, basically the boyfriend kills him, the new boyfriend. So then they say, you know, they say to Tommy, you know, you didn't see this, you didn't hear this, you didn't hear nothing. So he becomes blind, he becomes psychosomatically blind, deaf, and dumb. But then he rises up toward the end to become he becomes a religious leader, he becomes aware of the Meher Baba in the Eastern cults, like they had in the 60s, the hippie cults. But then he turns it into a fascist thing where he says, you know, if you want to follow me, you've got to play pinball. You know, and he says, you know, all the hippies are gathered around him, and he's singing in front of the pinball machines, you know. And then he says, okay, welcome to Tommy's holiday camp. You got to play by the rules. You got to play pinball if you want to follow me. I became aware last year. I became aware. Now you must become aware. And becoming aware means you got to play. Hey, you smoking Mother Nature, this is a bust. Hey, you Mr. Normal, you know, don't try to gain my trust. You ain't going to follow me in any of those ways. Hey, you Mr. You know where to put the cork. You know, he clamps down, right? And then they're like, we're not going to take it. So they overthrow him, right? They overthrow Tommy, the head of the cult. Well, the same thing is true in The Wall. The version of that in The Wall is everybody's excited to see Pink get up there. He shaves his eyebrows. Everybody's excited, and then they're shocked to hear him say, who let these faggots in? Who let these Jews? He looks Jewish. That one looks Jewish. That one's a coon. Who let all this riffraff into the room? And then everybody, all the conformists, you know, put on their masks, and they start, like, taking the gay guy out, taking the Jew out, and beating him, and he becomes the leader of this fascist leader. So it's a lot like the Who, you see? So it's kind of like, it's sort of the same kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Well, like a built-in dialectic kind of.
Yeah.
It's like, this is supposed to be meant to be all about this, but the leaders of this and the inspiration of this all came from people that are serious haters and part of this control system. That's amazing.
Yeah, the similarities between Tommy and The Wall are very similar. I think The Wall might have been inspired by Tommy. It's Roger Waters' own internalization, his own... You know, he's taking Tommy to a new level, you know, but instead of a religious leader of a religious hippie cult that tells his followers what to do, is a Nazi. Nazi leaders. Pink, you know, this rock star becomes this Nazi, this leader of a new neo-Nazi cult, you see? This punk rock, you know, it's like the punk rock version, you know? And Tommy had a lot of punk rock, too. The Who came out of the mods in the 60s. So there's a lot of resonance there. You know, both British bands, both post-war themes of a soldier who gets killed. In Roger's case, it's a very real instance of his dad being gunned down by the Nazis. In the Who's case, it's this soldier returning home from World War One being killed by
who are the two bands that kicked it off here in the U.S. in the '80s?
Kicked what off?
The punk rock movement.
New York Dolls and the Velvet Underground.
Yeah, and you remember how, like, when they came out and, like, sexualized, you know, they started wearing the tight pants and no shirt, and they get up there and they'd sing to where they'd almost collapse, and, you know, just complete insanity. And
we have Vinny Eastwood on, by the way. Welcome.
I was thinking the whole insanity of having your shirt off and working everybody into a sexual frenzy happened long before the 80s. I think it's the 60s, and before that, campfires and people dancing around pretending to be beasts and animal skins, you know, shaman type stuff.
I was referring to it more as like a rebirth of it. It was like, you know, an underground rebirth thing that happened, and it was all the youth of America kind of you know, if you were a rebellious guy, you fell into this, blew up down.
Well, it seems to me like so many of those popular culture movements are simply concocted psyops who are supported along by New World Order agents/agencies or operatives. And as a direct result, they seize control of virtually entire generations' attentions and distract them from other things that may be more important.
Bringing on a lot of other people, too. Dark Star, Pat, Robert Fisher, Sludge Warfare. So maybe I'll bring on Dop, too, if you guys don't mind. Welcome, everybody.
Yo, hello. Robert, dude.
Hello, Robert. Robert, welcome to the welcome to the Honey Radiance show, Robert.
Hey, g'day.
Yeah.
Hey, Vinny. Box One Gal here.
Yeah, welcome, Vinny. Good to see you over here. By the way.
Okay. And so, by the way, being September 11th, the 12th anniversary.
Oh, g'day, Vinny.
So far. What's the 9/11 Truth Movement achieved?
I know their fucking voice.
That's a good question. What is the 9/11 Truth? Well, I believe, you know, a lot of people in the mainstream say, well, if 9/11 was so secret, if it was an inside job, it would have been, if it's so secret, how could it be leaked, you know, or something like that? Or how could it be, it would have been, you know, there would have been, if we would have known about it, it would have been leaked, you know? You can't keep a tight lid on the secret. And I say, well, it has been leaked. It's called the Truth Movement.
Well, yeah, absolutely. The Truth Movement has sprung a WikiLeak, and they're simply pouring it on, you know, like gasoline on the bonfire of PNAC documents.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's not really.
And but on the other hand. Name me one criminal who actually perpetrated 9/11 and wasn't just tortured for 2 years with electrodes on the testicles that's actually gone to prison.
None.
Or actually been executed.
None whatsoever.
Living perfectly normal lives, apparently.
That's what Rick was saying about... that's what Rick was saying about... what's his name? Silverstein. We'll create this movement behind you and you ain't going to have nothing to worry about.
We decided to pull it. Oh, that's just a figure of speech, mate. Doesn't mean pull.
Yeah, what was he talking about?
What the fuck?
Was he talking about masturbation?
Yeah. We
were confused about this thing called the penis. It was just there between my legs, and
so now I want to erect a really, really big penis in the middle of the hole. It's gonna be 1,776 inches long. I can see Charlie Sheen's. I can see his hernia from here. I can see Charlie Sheen's hernia from here.
What about that guy? The guy that he was the. Wasn't he some like proprietor of the building handed over it like the day before?
Jeb Bush, he was the head of security for the World Trade Center complex. In fact, Melbourne. It was him and his company. Their contract expired on September 10th. Lucky man.
And Rice A, like, oh, don't get on the plane. What?
It's just like all the guys that got called and told not to come into work and the massive money transfers and...
Alex Jones.
What I found was very interesting. You mentioned Silverstein, and dig this. This is something I heard. He paid for the 100-year contract, a lease of the World Trade Center, and he put $1 down. Then he took out extra terrorism insurance, and then after a 9/11 event happened, he got a payout that paid for the entire 100 years. So he got 100 years worth of rental and materials for the World Trade Center for a buck.
Yep.
Now that's a shrewd fucking businessman.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking A, man.
Well, it is my hypothesis, okay? It's my hypothesis that this is part of a deliberately leaked plan. Like, the reason why, you know, I think Silverstein might have been instructed to sort of let loose, to kind of tell people that it was an inside job. You know, with his little hint, you know, we decided just to pull the building. And I think they may have instructed him to tell the people that, because to lay the groundwork for this future Jew-bashing alternative movement. You know, so then the blame can be laid on Silverstein, and then they can say, see, it's these Jews, it's Israel. It's like almost like he was like an Oswald himself but an Oswald that got off, you see? Like a protected Patsy.
That'd
like,
be great, because that way you can tar with a brush everybody who thinks 9/11 is an inside job as an anti-Semite.
Right.
And nobody could ever question Israel or any stuff like that. No.
Exactly. Well, that's what Oracle does.
And is there a more Jewish name than Silverstein? I think the only one I could think of is Banks, maybe.
Nah, anything with the wits after it.
Maybe
Steinstein.
Well, Steinstein.
Goldstein, mate. He's the Jew banking guy. Goldstein, go over to New Zealand and see what makes their banking. Oh, it's Australian money. Okay.
Well, you know, I think also, like, you know, with 9/11, what happened is that it was also the beginning of, like, the public robbery. You know, over the last, 12 years, 11 years now, they've robbed, I don't know what, some estimates are like $76 trillion out of the system.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was like the big one, you know. It, you know, 9/11 started, and how much money, gold and everything disappeared on that rob, you know, that day. It was hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars that were robbed out of the World Trade Center.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of fucking Die Hard.
That's,
you know,
exactly what I was just going to say. Yeah. When the trucks come in and they just cover it up and, like, take all the gold out.
No, well, see, incidentally... incidentally, when what was it? Die Hard 3 was being filmed. I watched it not too long back, and there's the two guys running, and the World Trade Center behind them, and they're talking about terrorism and stuff like that. And this bomb goes off in a subway, so that a huge heist with 14 dump trucks can be pulled on the Federal Reserve and every country's gold, the largest gold storage in the world there. And I was just thinking, man, because there was a rumor that came out of 9/11 that there was a column of flatbed trucks that were seen leaving the towers moments before they poofed into dust, kind of thing. And again, the gold and everything that was supposedly stored at the World Trade Center has never been recovered.
No, it never
that's
happened.
Probably why,
and then from that movie also, I'll say, Hans Booby. Remember?
That's probably why they don't pull any attention. That makes a good point. Mm. Maybe that's why they don't draw any attention to the, you know how, like they said for fucking, was it weeks afterwards, it was just molten metal and stuff that was just like, there was no way it could get that hot, right? Like maybe they were going to use that as to say why the gold's gone, or it got burnt with all the molten stuff, but... Because
what was funny is that there were testimonies from firefighters who said that their boots were melting on their feet and it wasn't hot, like, you know, the steel caps on your toes and stuff like that. One firefighter said he looked at his boot and it was sort of like melting off the side of it, and he was like, "What the hell?" And it was cool to the touch.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, that ties into a Judy Wood, the theory, you know, or is it Judy Wood?
Yes,
energy weapon.
I like Judy Wood.
That theory. Yeah, that whole thing, it kind of blew my mind. But, I mean, there was a lot of supporting stories for it, you know? Way more than you can just, like, discount offhand. I was like, that, you know, that's just crazy. Well, there's a lot of evidence that supported what she was talking about. So, I don't know.
And the interesting one was also the toasty cars. You heard about those. Basically, dig this. Imagine half a car totally charred, all right? And there's a perfect perforation, you know, an actual line drawn on one side of the car to the other. The other car completely, other side of the car completely untouched, not even so much as a hint of dust had fallen on it. And on the other side, completely burned to a crisp, you know? What does that? Nothing that I know of. As far as I know, if a car gets set on fire, the whole thing, you know, eventually goes up and it gets smoke damage on the rest of the car, that kind of thing. There were bits where the interiors of the cars were perfectly fine.
It's a gradient.
And
gradient
the windows were all busted out, and yet the skins of the cars, the exteriors, were burned to a crisp as well.
Only on one side, pretty much, though, also, right?
Yeah. But there's always a gradient between
Well, it's just two different incidents, you know.
not just like a perfect German.
You know, another aspect of this is, have you guys ever looked into, like, dreamwalkers? Like, people that actually have an effect on the physical world while they're in the dream state?
I don't know. Do you reckon that was the ritual sacrifice?
Let me just recite, you know, a first-hand experience of this. I know a dreamwalker. She's actually a really private person, and she wrote not so much a book, but more of like a book of stories from when she was young all the way up until I knew her, which was right around 45 or so. And she talks about the morning of 9/11. She said that something drew her to the area, and she ran, you know, across, you know, in dream state, like in her animal state. And once she got trying to get into the city, she was confronted by, like, interdimensional beings, like by an alien, interdimensional being, something like an alien. And that there was this huge dome over it, and it just, like, flat out said, no, you can't go in and help. Like, she had this uncontrollable urge to try to get in and help, and it wouldn't allow her to. So, and a lot of these other stories, you know, that she wrote, they were confirmed. You know, they what she did in the dream state did actually have an effect in the physical world, you know, 20 times over, you know, confirmed stories. Like, this is, you know, this lady just has this power. And it just adds another dynamic to the story of 9/11 a little bit. That it wasn't, I mean, it was controlled on a higher level than just, you know, Dick Cheney fucking planning it out and, you know, all this. Like, there was a higher action going on.
Just looking at the guy. It's like Lewis Black says that you don't even need to, you know, the comedy, level of comedy stoops so low you can just say Dick Cheney to get a laugh.
Yeah, you'd understand, of course, that when we're talking about things like 9/11, people have lost loved ones and stuff like that, and you look at these memorials, and you what is the fracking point of sitting there ringing out a bell of every single name that is drawn? I mean, like 2,700 bell rings. Thank you very much. Now, we'll see you again next year. What the fuck is that about?
And then they charge each city to freight in a piece of the wreckage so they can hold it in their city as some memorial. What was that? Like, how much did it cost for New Christchurch to get that bit of wreckage?
How the fuck did they get that wreckage? Did they import it back from China before it was fucking melted down?
Yeah, it's just a bent girder, eh? It's no proof it's the World Trade Center.
Yeah, it's just something some dude had in the back of his trailer park, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, it's for whom the bell tolls, baby.
Yeah. That's a part of the Astrodome that we got back in Katrina, you know what I'm saying? Nobody will know the difference, all right? Just spray some thermite dust on it or some shit, it'll look legit.
You know, there's a lot of people that even question the whole, why were they jumping out of the buildings, you know, out of the windows? Yeah. You know, when, you know, it was clear that the fire wasn't on those levels, that the heat wasn't to where, like, it would have been hurting them, and yet they were still jumping out. But, you know, the whole Judy Wood idea that, you know, the whole energy thing, it was like, you know, catching them on fire from within, you know, within themselves almost. You know, driving.
That sounds like something like...
And what was interesting is that they were taking their clothes off, sort of thing, but... In a fire, you don't take your clothes off, man. You keep them on because that prevents you from getting frickin' burnt. unless, of course, this could be explained by the fact that the American education system is so frackin' dumbed down at this point that people think exposing their flesh to flames.
Yeah.
Not my amen to that one.
No, not my
American life. Society is pretty dumbed down, though. There's a lot of smart people, but there's a lot of stupid ones, too.
Alex Jones today on his podcast publicized... Sorry, Vinny, go ahead.
Go ahead.
If I was on the 80th floor...
Whenever somebody says the word publicized...
My primary concern would not be...
It was on a blog.
Yeah.
My point is, Alex Jones today had this rant where he was reading out, like... something like he's just gained over 20 irrefutable truths, or pretty much smoking guns to the 9/11 was an inside job. And he says there's a link on his site at the moment on the social media site, something about, was it, they're going to do some like marathon where they just bring up like 20,000 irrefutable pieces of evidence or something.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that what we're talking about is red flags here. And if you have a look at the country of China with about a billion people or something like that, and the color of its flag is red, there's probably less red flags physically in China than there are intellectually on 9/11. You know what I'm saying? Basically, the whole thing is, it doesn't make sense. Like, nothing about even the evidence that we've got on it makes sense. Okay.
I think the main thing I figured out from all that was they put out so many diluted stories that led nowhere, so people just got sick of hearing about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And have you noticed, like, did anybody else go to a 9/11 truth protest or hear about a 9/11 truth protest today? Because I didn't.
Nope,
I didn't go out yesterday when it was 9/11 here in New Zealand, man. And I was just thinking to myself, man, that's really fucking depressing. There ain't no 9/11 truth in New Zealand no more, as far as I'm concerned. And if there was, I probably would have heard about it. But
no, yeah, you know, I didn't either. You know, I live in Colorado Springs, and this is a pretty like open-minded city, and I didn't hear about anything either.
I didn't hear anything here. Nope.
It's all quiet on the 9/11 front.
Mm.
And the only people that seem to be talking about it are the current radio broadcasters and things like that. Like, every radio show host I know did something about 9/11 today on their show, but not a single one of them went out and protest or did anything like that. I think it's because they're tired of getting assaulted in the streets by psychotic, oh, you're just a communist.
And dudes with megaphones.
I want to put something before the audit, before the panel here. What do you guys think about the idea of the Patriot Movement or Truther Movement coming to power in certain states? Like, what do you think about a secession movement with Alex Jones being the leader? What do you guys think? What do you think it would be like?
I think it'd be
substituting one megalomaniac for another.
Well, that's definitely true.
Well, if the Trinity hooked up, what would it be? Would it be it would be David Icke, Alex Jones, and Michael Desarian. Then we'd have them all.
Those men don't want the power.
They have their own individual thing. There's a quote
by Lord Acton, which is often misquoted. What was it? Absolute power. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, and all great men are inherently evil.
Yeah.
That's the end of the quote.
They forget that bit.
I saw a movie called Hitler, The Rise of Evil, and it's about the young Hitler growing up, and you know, people laughed at him. They didn't take him seriously at first, you know. I'm thinking about Alex Jones. Like, he reminds me of the young Hitler, you know what I mean? Like, very, very firebrand, very, very passionate. You know, he's very charismatic. People, like, I heard him speak after the Geraldo Rivera incident in New York on you know, there's a clip out there on YouTube of him wearing a black shirt at the podium in a dark light. It's really eerie. And he looks like Hitler. He sounds like Hitler. Like, he's speaking like, ideas are eternal. And then the people clap and they roar. See, it's like I can translate it in German. Ideen sind ewig. You know, I can shake my fist. Like, in the way Alex Jones shakes his fist. Very dramatizing. Very dramatization.
Yeah, this is what I'm. This brings out a point that I've wanted to raise on radio for quite some time, is that the people in the truth movement are corruptible, okay? And most of us are damaged goods, okay? We've got mental problems, most of us, okay? whether they be anger management problems or megalomania, narcissism, things or depression, things like that, they're all through. I mean,
alcoholism?
The thing is, I don't classify being addicted to marijuana as a disease either. But the other thing is, when we're talking about how much influence people gain, okay, for instance, if you're more powerful than the people that can critique you, you don't really have to listen to them. Okay? That's why tyrants don't listen to their people, because their people can't do shit about it. And what I'm concerned about is a kind of cult-like following of any truth movement figure, Alex Jones aside. This is something that exists within the human condition, full stop. If you get a lot of power, you get a lot of respect, you got a lot of influence and what have you, the likelihood is you will simply start using it, then you will start to be tempted by it, then you will start abusing it, and then you will start to destroy the people that you tried to free.
Yeah, you'd be owned by it. Yeah, that's a natural
state. I feel.
What's all that money?
I listen to it.
Well, then, let me
add something to that, Vinny. I listened to a talk yesterday on TED Talks about education. And what it talked about was the natural way of... Well, it starts out like this, okay? And what, you know, Lucy, 3 million years ago, right? She's walking through the frickin' grass, and she hears a rustle in the bushes. Now, she's got two choices. She can either decide, you know... Decision one is, oh, it was just the wind, just continue on walking. Or she can decide, shit, that might be a fucking, you know, saber-toothed tiger over there, and, you know, change her path and avoid getting eaten. Choice A or choice B. Now, this way of thinking is built into humans. So... you know, because if the guy goes with choice A and it's a freaking tiger and he gets eaten, well, he's not in the gene pool anymore. So, you know, the ones that survived through time are the ones that usually went with choice B that would decide to believe that there's something there. You know, that brings the rise of superstition. It also brings the rise of believing in things sometimes, like, you know, conspiracy theories, different things. Like, we're conditioned, we're built to believe in these things. So
bullshit detector.
Because it's just survival. It's built into us.
If you
always went with choice A, shit, you know, you'd have been eaten.
It almost raises the specter again of us being engineered by the Anunnaki to be perfect slaves and maybe to be armies, you know? Maybe we are engineered to be obedient and at the same time to have some individuality, enough to think creatively. But you know what I mean?
Oh, I think we were just.
Well, I think what David Icke told me is that. Oh, sorry, go ahead, mate.
You're right.
Okay. Well, what David Icke told me is that basically the entities that he believes in, it's kind of like, you know how there's this demonized version of, oh, he's talking about lizard people and blah, blah, blah. He never actually mentioned that once to me, you know? He talks about demonic energy and non-physical entities, that kind of thing. And I was just thinking, the whole crux of their problem with us is that we got creativity and they don't. They're intensely jealous of it. You know, they've got no ability to create things for themselves. And so they want to control us because that's what they think like. It's obsession. What would you call it? A hierarchical obsession. You want to put everything into boxes. You want to put everything into categories. You want to put everything into pyramids. Okay, and you want it to be from the top, top down, from everything, with all of these stupid rules, regulations, blah 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 blah. And you think about, how is our society currently run? Exactly the same way. If I go into high school, is there a hierarchy there? Oh yeah, the kids are slaves, and the teachers are their slave master, and the boss of the slave recycling facility, known as the public education system, is called a headmaster. Yes, master. Headmaster. Oh, isn't that nice? Interesting.
New car caviar.
I didn't even realize it happened.
Oh, that is interesting. He's a headmaster.
New car caviar. 4-star daydream. A poet. He fancies himself a poet. I remember that from the
you
wall.
Know what? You know, I was thinking the same thing. You know, about how witches, or you know, it goes into these ancient stories about the hair. Like, you got to have long hair. John Dee, you know, talks about it, that you have to have the long hair.
Nazarene.
Stuff that connect.
Nazarite.
Well, what is a hairstylist called, like, officially? It's a cosmetologist. You know, they control the cosmos coming into you.
Oh.
Is that where cosmetologist?
Cosmetologist.
What they're called. Is that why Satanists all have their hair long?
And
beards.
keep those females busy.
No, but that's some real shit. You know, people believe that. It's, you know, you don't cut your hair because you lose the connection to the cosmos, to the spirit world or whatever.
It's also why the therapist is called the rapist.
Yeah, yeah. The rapist. I saw that yesterday.
It's one of our songs.
Where's the rapist at? Yeah, I was thinking about that.
We've got my band's got a song for every conspiracy, yeah. Just about every conspiracy. They're constructing.
So you've got downstairs. so you've got 8,000 albums, do you?
We've got three yeah. Albums. Yeah, we should have actually played Terror Storm yesterday because that would have been a good commemoration or commiseration.
You know. Yeah, that's one thing that I'd like to share with a lot of you. With a lot of you guys is, you know, my movie archives. I've tried to track down a lot of like arcane different movies and different films and stuff like that. But I'm pretty good in that area. I've always had an interest, but I'm not in the music side. It's not to say I don't like music. I'd love to find some stuff, but I just don't have the motivation to dig into an entirely new genre, work it forward from 200, 500 years ago.
By the way, speaking of...
I like it when people send you things in small doses. Okay, like, right. Hey, bro, listen to this one song. As opposed to somebody who says, hey, bro, check out this song and that song and that, blah, 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 blah. You never even start.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gets too heavy.
Mein Kampf checklist. I was in the reading of Mein Kampf, which I'm reading right now. Hitler is now talking about him on page 400. He's talking about whores and prostitutes, how bad prostitution is to Germany, how it caused syphilis. Now, who talks about whores all the time? Lee Rogers and Celtic Rebel. Checklist.
The Rectal Rebel.
Yeah. Celtic Rebel, eh? What, wasn't he part of your guys' affiliate radio for a while?
No. I was never affiliated with... I have my own thing. I'm never affiliated
Patrick?
With...
Patrick?
Patrick?
No, not Pat either.
No.
He just called in, and then they made fun of him, and so when they were making fun of him, I found Rick. So that was awesome.
Yeah, I mean,
you really do gotta love those people. There.
What led most of us over to Oracle was actually Chris Geo, I think.
Not me.
You know,
Chris,
not me. Alex Ansari is the one that led me to Oracle.
Yeah, Chris Geo led me over there. And, you know, our conversation over here on our show is what I think led to having Chris leave Oracle.
I mentioned something about that kind of crap.
What was that? Who's speaking here?
That was Robert there. What was that?
I think a while ago I was talking to Patrick and stuff, and I was mentioning to him about Vin Eastwood and Guerrilla Media and how he should get him on the show. And then he said you should tell him about Honey Radiant show. I think I spammed Vinny a while ago about it. It's real strange. Then I got invited, and it's like, I know that voice.
Yeah, me and Vinny actually.
And then here I am.
Yeah, me and Vinny talked last Friday, actually, too.
You know what?
Brought over Stelios. What do you know of Stelios? A dude is a fucking, like he's a doctor. He's like a genius. I don't know. Have you chatted? Well,
the ability of genius is defined as being able to explain a complex system simply so that somebody yes. of even average intelligence can understand it without much equivocation. And he certainly does that.
I don't know him well.
I
don't know who he is. You know, I chatted with him, and it was like, holy shit, this guy is very intelligent.
If you go to my radio show website, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, and you click on the featured interviews page, I think the second interview down is one with George Norrie. And in the last 45 minutes of the show, Stelios, a.k.a. the Greek, called in, and that was my very first introduction to him. And ever since then, he's been a real loyal listener of my show, and I give him a lot of grace to speak his truth and that kind of thing, and even got him to host a show in my absence once when I had a week off. and he's been taking part in the Vinnie Eastwood show social network chats. Every day after the show, we have a Skype group call with anybody who wants to join. You know, I just put my Skype address into the chat room of the website, and people add me and call me, and then we all have a big group conversation every single day. And it was real funny, right, because half the time, not half the time, but some of the time, when the Greek comes on, he'll start talking, and it starts to turn into just basically a radio show. It's not a group conversation anymore. Yeah. And it's not a bad thing, because everybody's sitting there listening, kind of getting absorbed by it. And just recently, we had a conversation where we said, "Man, when are you getting a radio show?" And he's like, "Oh, people aren't ready for it. You know, people are too dumb." and just like, frickin' bullshit, man. Half the chats that we do, it winds up being your radio show. You know, people are ready for this now.
I wanted to ask him, you know, this is the first time I've met you, Vinny, and I've heard a lot about you, though, but I kept hearing, who's this Vinny is? I was kept thinking, who's this Vinny Eastwood, you know? And because I think the first thing I think of is Clint Eastwood and My Cousin Vinny is something from Hollywood. But, you know, I just didn't, you know, you're from Britain or from Australia or so.
New Zealand.
Oh. Think of another colonized place that has English speaking people in it.
No, he's not
well, there's only a few of them. The sun never sets on Britannia's holdings, but there's only a few white colonies left.
So you have a radio show? I heard you do, right? So where can I find your show at? Start listening, maybe.
AmericanFreedomRadio.com.
Oh, okay. American Freedom.
You can find.
That's what confuses a lot of New Zealanders about
network. And, yeah.
American Freedom?
Well, the thing is, it's good because I see, like, the New Zealanders get confused by the fact that I ask them to go listen to American Freedom Radio to hear me broadcast live from New Zealand and also broadcast live to the States. And the people in America are like, they're confused because I say I'm from New Zealand. They go, where?
Was that a state of Australia?
Island out there somewhere.
Did you hang out with Pat? Did Pat stay with you when he was in New Zealand, or did he?
No, that was me.
Oh, that was you. Okay, so both of you are from...
So Pat's told you about me, has he?
Oh, yeah. Pat introduced
that
me.
That guy that spins me out.
We're talking about this Pat character. Which Pat are we talking about? I know several. Pat, one of them happens to be my cousin, so I don't think it's that one.
He's in the call, but he's not here. Where are you, Pat?
No, he's
Pat's on... Rob. That's Patrick, eh?
Patrick Marsface from Fargo. He's not on the... He's got a Do Not Disturb icon on his Skype right now. He doesn't want to be called, so...
And he has a... His YouTube channel is Mars Has Life, by chance?
I didn't even know he had a YouTube channel.
No, you don't have
one. Okay, well, that's good, because this actually illustrates how my show actually works. I don't have a clue who you guys are. You guys don't have a clue who I am. And yet we're sitting here having an interesting conversation. They're just incidentally people listening, right?
Oh, yeah.
Every single one of my shows is like that. I'll bring on George Norrie. Who the fuck is George Norrie to me? You know, like 39 million listeners. He's big in the States. I don't know who the fuck he is. So we bring him on and just go, "Hey, George, what's up, bro? Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
I
found it really fascinating, your interviews with George Norrie, Vinny, because you just, like, talk to him like some, you know, he's like some guy, you know, and he, you know, he's kind of expecting a bit of deferential treatment and, you know, you should know who I am, kind of, and you're just like, yeah, well, whatever, I don't know if I buy that. And you kind of pushed
it. It's more like, okay, bro, you are who you are, but let me show you who I am.
Yeah, I liked it. It's good.
You know? And I am myself, and I'm not going to. I've had a quite difficult time, right, fitting in my entire life. I never have. And then as I grew, I became 6'4", and I found it even more difficult to fit in, especially Japanese cars. And it turns out that every single job that I've ever had was not right for me, because it was beneath me. Okay. Really beneath me. wasn't up to my intellectual capacity, I wasn't challenging myself, and not to mention, everybody who I was working with was either a dick, or a loser, or something else that's derogatory and can't be mentioned on FCC-regulated radio. You know? You figure it out. Holy fuck! Every single goddamn job that I've ever had has been working for cocksuckers and fuckwits. Jesus fucking Christ! I've got to find a new career path. And I developed this disorder that I've nicknamed employophobia. A fear of being employed.
That's great.
Nice.
Now, I'm serious about this, though. I actually have... If I'm about to be employed, no kidding, I'll start to have a panic attack, okay? Somebody's like, hey, Vinny, I'm going to offer you this job. And all of a sudden, the heart starts racing and the pulse goes up and it's just and start to hyperventilate and shit like that. I cannot fucking be employed, man. It's something that is not just a psychological thing for me. Like, there are physical symptoms that go with it.
Is it because you are rebellious? Because I'm rebellious, too. I don't like my boss.
Well, rebellious people don't like their bosses. They don't have nearly a heart attack at the thought of having a new one.
That's true. Because I'm one of them. I hate every single one of my bosses.
This will be a good one for you then. The American Medical Journal released a study on psychopathy, and how they describe psychopaths as somebody who's very nice and smiley when you first meet them, and a rather intoxicating individual who actually gets you to sort of like them a little bit. But you find out later on that there's not really a terribly large amount of depth to their character, and they don't have any long-lasting relationships outside of business, and they don't really give a fuck about anybody other than themselves. And when I read that, I was like, holy shitballs. It's every fucking employer I've ever had.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Your life is the job, eh?
Now, this brings an important point, because the article goes on to state that the three most likely industries you are to find these psychopathic characters is business, media, and politics. What would you say are the three main pillars of society that control what everybody thinks, does, and survives with?
Media.
Media is
business
one.
And politics.
Politics.
What about religion?
Okay, so here we go. The system is designed to bring psychopaths into power, okay? That's what my conclusion is. If somebody has power, it means they're probably a psycho of some description, and you can usually tell it by how they use their power. Do they use power to selflessly and for the benefit of others mostly, or do they do it selfishly and benefit themselves mostly? You know, this is what I'm talking about when it comes to personal corruption. And I asked Bob Chapman one time, and it was much earlier on in my radio career, God rest his soul, that what about eliminating corruption altogether forever? Would it be possible? Has it ever been done? No. Has anybody ever managed to weed out corruption? And he said, no, it's a perennial problem, okay? It's just like weeding your garden. Weeds will always grow. It means that you need to be maintaining, okay, the levels of corruption in your society, rather than attempting to extinguish them, and rather than letting them control you forever, kind of thing.
Hate to say it, but that's the truth.
Mm-mm-mm. And my methodology for doing this for myself, I hope I don't become that guy. And you know that guy that I'm talking about, bro, who doesn't give a fuck about anybody else. I'm too big now. Fuck all the rest of you. That sort of fucking bullshit. I do not want to turn into that kind of fucking trash, man. Fuck that shit, okay? I want to be nice. I want to be happy. I want to have good friends. I want to have a fucking clean future. And I don't want to have to worry about people fucking coming to kill me in the goddamn middle of the night because I decided to tell the truth once in a while. You know what I'm saying?
And
I want to be fucking
Rick's
safe. I want to be fucking honest, and I want to be fucking here right now. And I don't want to, betray my friends. I don't want to accumulate power or money or any of that stuff. I want to accumulate relationships, long-lasting, valuable, strengthening relationships that you actually learn something off the person with. You know, most of my friends are older than I am, way more educated, way smarter, and as a direct result, I have absorbed all their education and their smarts and what have you and improved myself as an individual. This is what I find is the gold of society, is finding good people to hang with, talk with, and do shit with. Everything else is a waste of fucking time.
I agree.
You know how many friends I've still got from high school?
You're here.
You know how many friends I've still got from high school? None. You know how many friends I've still got from university? None. You know how many friends I've still got from every single previous job that I've ever had? None. I have never, ever, ever made friends with anybody that has become a long-lasting relationship out of a situation that I was forced into, like work, like school, like university, or any shit like that. You're just coincidentally there together. I've always, on the other hand, found that the truth movement is a place where you can make really, really powerful friendships. Like, I have just done 4 hours of radio today, due in no small part to my friendship with the illustrious and fabulous Charlie McGrath from Wide Awake News Radio. So plug in there for you, Charlie, on the Rents Network. And it's become a commonplace thing where I'm so well liked because I do so much for everybody without asking any in return, that I get all of that stuff in return without even having to ask for it. You know what I'm saying? That's what a real relationship is. Giving shit not because giving a shit and giving a hand not because you have to, but because, you know, fuck it, you feel like it, you know? You'll see a smile on somebody else's face.
Religion. That's the main tenet of every religion. Mm-hmm.
Which is why I disagree in base premise with almost all the tenets of major religions except that one. What I figured out is that because every single religion fights with each other, it means that they all must be wrong. And if they weren't all wrong, then the argument would be over pretty fucking quickly, wouldn't it? Okay, you know, somebody would come up with this, that, or the other, and facts to prove one way or the other that this religion is superior. The fact that they've never done it means that they must all be wrong. And then when you come out and say, "Hey, you're all wrong," you get both sides of the fucking argument who are wrong hating you for being right.
Oh, totally. That's why I think religion should be wiped off the planet.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Foxy was there. I want freedom, not annihilation.
It's pretty much like an institute. Okay?
Freedom of religion, absolutely necessary for a free society. Okay, and just bear in mind the good points about religion. The fact that I point to most poignantly is, in fact, the experience of prisoner of war. Prisoners of war in the Vietnam era, and it turns out that if you are captured, or in that scenario at least as it was, you had an extraordinarily high probability of survival if you had a deep belief in God rather than not. Because when you're locked alone in that room and nobody's coming to save you, the man who does not believe in God is truly alone. The man who believes in God is never alone. So that's the whole idea behind it. And it doesn't necessarily have to be God. It has to be any form of power that you believe is outside of yourself, something that is eternal, something that cannot be extinguished. These are the qualities that I expect in the people around me, those people who will not give up no matter how dire the circumstances, those people who will not give in to evil, no matter how great the temptation, those who truly believe in and of themselves, that alone, that they are enough to do anything that needs to be done via the grace of God, whatever. Me personally, I believe that there's definitely no fracking way that I'll join a religion. There's no fracking way I'll join a political party. Okay, I wouldn't want to be a member of any society that would have me as a member, because I don't ever conform to rules. I always push boundaries. That's the reason why I keep getting fired from jobs, why people hate me sometimes if they don't understand who I am and what I do, because I'm not content with shit just as it is. I'm not content with a vain, vacuous explanation that requires no intellectual capacity to process. I'm not interested in any of that. I'm interested in deep shit, okay? The metaphysical. I'm interested in different planes of consciousness, pharmacratic aspects, you know, like shaman journeys and things like that. These are some of the ways that the ancients used to commune with their divine. And I think that basically it came down to the Salem witch trials and all of that kind of bullshit. They had a look at all of these people who were taking shrooms and other stuff to expand their mind and going on spirit quests and blah, blah, blah. And they go, oh, fuck, that's going to challenge our blind religious dogma there, because they're actually going to commune with the spirits directly without having to go through us as an intermediary with the Latin written Bible, so they won't understand what the fuck we're saying anyway. Shit. Kill them all. And that's exactly what they did. So they killed off, basically, humanity's capacity to connect with the spirit by destroying and making illegal substances that gave our brains the ability to access those levels, things like DMT and whatnot.
Well, not to mention the fact...
That's a strange...
Well, not to mention the fact that... That's
I just want to say a fucking here.
Oh, yeah.
It's in everything.
Well, I just want to say that's due to the fact that we make DMT naturally in our bodies... The United States government has effectively outlawed the human species itself. Because every human possesses DMT, therefore every human is in possession of a Schedule 1 substance. I mean, effectively, our law has outlawed the human species, and almost every other species on the planet.
Yeah, and whoever said that government can't make being alive illegal?
Well, hey, water now costs, and it's illegal to collect rainwater.
Yeah, make it illegal.
In New Zealand now, we're going to have Monsanto employees with automatic weapons with immunity from prosecution who'll be able to come onto your property and shoot you if you as give your neighbor a turnip.
Vinny, you're saying that passed?
Seed of corn.
It's passed its first couple of readings, and what I'm waiting for is the enforcement. Because what they do is they'll pass, one government will pass the legislation. Then when they're voted out, the next government will enact that legislation and blame it on the previous government.
No, I heard about that. I heard about how Monsanto was going to try to enact a certain kind of an immunity of sorts, almost government, almost a government status is what they were pushing for. I heard about it like a couple months ago. And I haven't seen any.
It's part of the Agenda 21.
Have you seen something new about that?
It's part of the. Yeah. I see stuff about it all the time, man. It's part of the Agenda 21 and Codex Alimentarius protocols. Well, basically, if you've got any form of independence left, you ain't. All right. If you can grow your own food, if you can feed yourself without a government food stamps, you won't be able to do that no more. Sorry.
About Monsanto. Absolutely. Directly. Yeah. They were trying to create.
And Monsanto will control the. Yeah. It's private contractors in New Zealand now have basically the same status as government employees and things like that. It's part of fascism as the corporations come in and just start taking over the government. And I think it was through public-private partnerships this is accomplished. So public-private partnerships are beautiful. What you do is you get the people to pay for a resource that the people have already paid for and already own. And then you pay somebody else to run that resource, and then they take all the cream off the top, which would ordinarily go to you, and then they let the resource depreciate in value, and then they flog it off back to the people later on when it's really, really down and all the money has been sucked out for a 100-year contract or whatever the hell. And basically, you're left holding the bag, and what you used to have was something valuable, something that worked, something that returned dividends on a yearly basis. In other words, you were independent. That is being under attack in New Zealand for a long time, since the 80s, as far as my recollection goes, as far as privatization. But now what's happening is you have a vast majority of all government work being done almost exclusively by contractors with no-bid contracts. The whole idea of contracting out is that you will allow bidding to take place for different companies, small and large, all set aside so that you give everybody a chance to do the best job. Because if you walk into a supermarket and you... Yeah, if you walk into a supermarket and you've got a rack of food or something like that, and you want to have the best quality or the best price or whatever, they've clearly got the price marks there. They've clearly got the product labels and all of that sort of stuff. But with government contracting, it's now different. We've got a new term now called preferred contractors. which means if you're a preferred contractor, you get the contract. It's just that simple. Doesn't matter when the what the contract is, how long it's been up for tender, any shit like it just gets flogged off.
Is that New Zealand? Like Bridge?
Mm-hmm. That's what's happening in the Super City.
Is that going on in the US?
Look at it this way. Look at it this way. Every country, everywhere, that is part of the New World Order system, which is every country, has the exact same shit going on at the exact same time in the exact same way. Okay? So you just translate. Instead of me saying Auckland private contractors, you say Chicago private contractors. And instead of saying city public-private partnerships of Chicago, Illinois, you say city public-private partnerships of Auckland, New Zealand. Same shit, different area, okay? That's why it is definitely a conspiracy, because if it wasn't, there would be a slight amount of variance. There isn't any variance. It is exactly the same system. They even control their meetings in precisely the same way, using the Delphi technique. They allow people to get their air out during the public consultations when all these people are standing on their hind legs going, "You're going to steal our city, you fucking cunt Sasquatch bitch nuggets! Fuck you!" You know, they let them go off like that for as much as they want. And then, after the conference is over, they've written down all these notes of everything everybody said, and then they select which things that they want to accept and which things they want to adopt. Anybody who's complaining about the current agenda and what they had in mind anyway basically simply just doesn't get on the record at all.
And gets noted as like, this is who said that, you know. Yeah, you go on the list. Yeah, that's scary, Vinny. That's just scary right there. I mean, yeah, we were talking about tonight on the show with, you know, when Rick was talking about it, you know, this global community starting to take over and trying to create this dialectic because reinforce a dialectic, I guess, and about the nationalism. Are you starting to see like a reinforcement of nationalism going on in New Zealand too?
I wouldn't say so. If anything, it's been completely adopted towards globalism. Every single time New Zealand has a problem, there's never any "we can solve this, we're New Zealanders, we're creative, number eight wires." It's always "we need foreign banks to help us, we need foreign countries with trade deals to help us, we need the UN, we need the World Bank." And in fact, we just appointed a World Bank aficionado, the head of our Reserve Bank, and simultaneously passed miraculous legislation to give the Reserve Bank even more control over the economy than it already has, which is basically total.
Yeah, see, they haven't quite got past that here in the U.S. It's, well, obvious. I mean, everybody in the U.S., it's like, you know,
it's only a matter of minutes, it's a matter of time.
The fucking nationalism is like our fucking religion here, you know. And you're bred up to it. I mean, you started in kindergarten, you know, you start saying the national anthem and all this. And, you know, the Republican National Convention, they had a third grade class, you know, started out by, you know, saying the national anthem and all this. And they actually made it illegal in schools a couple years ago to actually have to say the national anthem. But it's really clear that, you know, Mitt Romney and all this, they're enforcing nationalism, and that it's the only hook they have left here in the United States right now. They've lost, and they've lost, you know, sports isn't doing it anymore. All these different things that they've had.
No, that's not true. That's not true. Sports is doing it remarkably. Well, have you noticed how they always hold elections real, real close to a major sporting event? And you notice how voter turnout's real fucking low? It's not a coincidence. Okay? Dig this. Dig this, bro. New Zealand example. I heard about the Rugby World Cup, biggest fucking rugby event that's ever come to these goddamn shores, right? We amalgamated the whole city of Auckland, 1.4 million people, 9 separate cities, okay? We amalgamated them all into one to give one super mayor the ability to have a hand-picked, unelected, 20-person cabinet to rule with an iron fist over the entire city just so they can do what? That's right. Facilitate one sporting event, the Rugby World Cup. and of course, the way that they tell everybody about this is, blah, 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 it's going to be good for the economy and anyway, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there might be a few compliance cost problems there and blah, 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 and other shit that we're not fucking going to tell you because you won't want it other, even if we do. But people didn't want it anyway, right? But they did it regardless. So here's the gig. Rugby World Cup. It's on the TV for like 90 days straight. Now, I'm a New Zealander who hates rugby, okay? I'm a very, very odd character. For me, a vein appeared on the side of my temple that I had not noticed before. A throbbing, raging vein, okay? I blame the Rugby World Cup for this. Holy. And guess what the election, this was funny. John Key, the Prime Minister himself, okay, it's like the President has the ability to call the elections whenever he wants, okay, literally whenever he wants. So he manages to call the election 2 weeks after the Rugby World Cup, which means for 90 days preceding your election, instead of getting election coverage and knowing what your candidates are talking about and seeing debates, you're instead seeing a rugby game. Okay, and then for the last 2 weeks, you have a quick draw McGraw fucking race for 15 umpteen different political parties to get their messages out. And guess what? The New Zealand had the lowest voter turnout since 1896. Okay, that was back when women couldn't fucking vote. That's how bad the turnout was. It was very fucking deliberate, in my opinion, because everybody was watching the TV, watching that sport, not watching what the government was doing, not watching the fact that basically, if anybody had gotten off their ass and fucking voted, the current government would have been turned out on their ass. In a flash, there was that much of a groundswell of anger against them, but nobody voted. Isn't that funny?
And how did
news just told everybody the news just told everybody we've got over 50% support. There's no fucking point in voting, basically.
How did they validate?
Sound familiar?
How do they validate it to the people that it's a valid vote? Then
I don't know. When how can you validate voted? That voting is valid?
Same
regardless.
Thing happened in Bolivia a couple of years ago, and they actually had to recall the vote. A bunch of people actually went and voted, but they voted for nobody. Like, people went and voted.
No.
And they marked nobody.
Yeah.
You know? It's not the same
thing. That's
case,
what happens if you have a third... That's what happens if you have a third world country. You're actually able to get some kind of, you know, decent electoral process.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Too many millions of people here in the U.S. for that to work, too. Well, they just showed that it works. You know, they used
years. Well, that's what Diebold machines are for.
That's scary.
You know, that's what the electronic voting machines with the viruses implanted in them are for, you know? So it's like, oh, well, all these people, they're real fucking stupid and they're too fucking lazy to come out and vote anyway. But just in case, they're actually smart enough to elect somebody who won't fucking shaft them six ways from fucking Sunday... Let's just rig the voting machines anyway. That'll be fun. So we can get one of the other two fake candidates that we've got to deliver our agenda instead.
No, I don't know. I'm pretty nervous, actually, about, you know, this next cycle going through here in the United States. Mitt Romney is, in my mind anyway, he's scary.
They're all scary, man.
No, Mitt Romney's not going to lose. Mitt Romney's going to lose hands down, bro. Look at it. Barack Obama scumbag that he is a slick salesman motherfucker. Okay? Nobody can deny that the long-legged Mac Daddy got game. Right. He is going to manipulate the people again, just like he did before. And you have a look at Mitt Romney. He's fucking pathetic by comparison. He's dull. He's uninteresting. He's just another old white guy. And you know, it's like almost, you know what? The alternative is shitter than what we've got already. What the fuck choice is that?
No, yeah. And you know what? The only other alternative is Ron Paul. And, you know, that's a scary
thing. That's not an alternative, mate. That is
Can you imagine what kind of weakness it would show the world if Ron Paul took office? I mean,
Let me come in
for a minute here. Guess who's running on the Libertarian candidate and the Libertarian platform in this election? And he's actually going to be the third party candidate. Nope. Mr. I privatized half the prisons in my state, Gary Johnson.
I never heard. Really? Never heard of it.
Spoke at the Ron Paul rally. He privatized prisons in his state of New Mexico. Okay, Mr. I privatized half the prisons in my state. Best service, lowest cost, and that's what we did. Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico. He's running under the Libertarian Party? Wait a minute. I thought that privatized prisons is the biggest threat, is the reason why we're in this mess right now.
It's kind of eclectic. They do that kind of thing. Like, privatization technically ain't a bad thing. However, it depends who's doing the privatizing. Is it a major mega death corporation that already owns everything and is owned by criminal sociopaths who are wanting to take over the entire country, or is it being privatized into a local operation where the city becomes responsible for it? And it becomes a way to reduce costs. Now, privatization does work, but only if it's done to.
Sorry, yeah, but check this out, Vinny. Check this out.
It's almost always the former. And
yeah,
it's
yeah. Good. Let Rick take. This let Rick take.
Corporations
let,
like Wacken Hut.
Yeah, let Rick
feel
that one.
Let me come in here. We, Gemma, you know, when you privatize prisons, it becomes any business must grow. It becomes their economic incentive. It becomes in their best interest because they want to grow to lobby for tougher legislation, longer sentences for more crimes, and that's exactly what we see here. There's this ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Commission.
The thing is, they're not privatizing them. They're partnering, okay? Because what the government's exactly. supposed to stay the fuck out of business, as far as I'm concerned. The government should have no fucking role in the economy, okay? You shouldn't have... that kind of thing left up with businesses and all of that kind of stuff, because it becomes hard to draw the line between what is the state, what is a corporate, and what is private now. Because I feel the real danger here, particularly in America, is that the people will be left with absolutely nothing. A few corporations will have everything, and they'll have all the power, including owning the government and all the politicians in it. It doesn't cost that much to bribe the entire Congress and Senate and House of Representatives and President, as it turns out. If you spend, on average, I think it was like about $350 million a year bribing politicians in the United States, you can get any legislation you want passed. And you'll get legislation that gives you $2 trillion kind of thing for $350 million. Sound like a fucking good deal? That's why lobbying is the number one business in the United States, because corporations, I believe, should not be able to lobby government, okay? Because what they do is they try to lobby government in a way that benefits them and them only. You know, they're lobbying for their own interests. I see that there's an area for that, okay? But what I see is the stink of corruption about it right now, as we see. It's all over the place. Anytime you see a lobbyist, you think to yourself, this guy's a scumbag. He's about to rob me, isn't he? You know? Kind of like some hood walks up to you in the street and he's kind of low and he's kind of like shifty and stuff like that, and he's got a gun, and you're like, holy shit, this guy's going to mug me.
Let me interrupt.
about how obvious a lobbyist is.
Let me for a second. I'm trying to get Robert Fischer dropped off. I'm trying to get him back on. Does he want to not? Does he want to get off the show now? Because he keeps keeps hanging up, and I try to add him. So let you know, Robert. If you still want to come on, let me know. If you not, then don't. But okay. Okay, I'm getting a message from. Sorry, I'm busy. Okay. Cool. All right. So anyway, you know, we found here that, you know, in our show, we found that Corrections Corporation of America and GEO, another privatized prison, are lobbying for tougher legislation, for longer sentences, for longer periods of time. I consider it to the point now where I consider private prisons to be the greatest threat to freedom in this country. They are the reason why we have the highest prison population in the world, why we have over 2 million people. Yep. They are the reason why we are going to jail for longer and longer.
Well, actually, and here's the interesting thing. The U.S. government, I think, was it in California, the three strikes law. Fuck, yeah. That's a sick law, bro. Some guy went to life in prison because of about three joints.
Yeah.
Caught different times of three, you know. And what was it? There's a guarantee, I think, a government guarantee for 90% capacity for those prisons.
Yes, there is.
Yeah.
And Gary Johnson is involved in that.
So,
and you guys know where all this
now,
started.
Now, where is morality in all this?
Where this started? It was the corruption of the judicial system by the fucking George Bush when he passed the maximum minimum laws. It was the first time in American history where the judicial system accepted the fact that they had just been superseded. That you could put a guy in, three strike law, you know, put a guy in jail for 10 years, you know, no matter what, over, you know, the maximum minimum laws when it came to the drug war. You know, so it all comes back to this fucking, the drug war, this whole fucking thing on the drugs. It's like, do you guys really, I mean, you know, we have it up on the ballot here in Colorado this fall to legalize marijuana. It doesn't matter. If every motherfucker in this state went and voted yes on this, it'll still be said, oh, yeah, we lost 49-48 or 49-51. It will not happen because it has nothing to do with our state and what we want. It's going to come down to it's the control system in the United States. And we can, you know, there could be maybe up to 5 states this year.
The control system seems to have most effect when people respect it. The control system seems to have the most effect when people respect it. Like in Iceland, for instance, they didn't respect the control system at all, and a few hundred people stormed the parliament and just dragged the politicians out and just threw them into the street. Okay? And they solved their economic problem inside of a few minutes. You know, because they threw out all the corrupt politicians physically. Didn't hurt nobody. Just kicked them out of there and said, bro, well, you haven't actually, been doing a fucking job.
They threw them through the streets. The police
did they?
Walked them through the streets. Did you see the video?
Yeah.
That was fucking beautiful.
So they weren't doing any cruel and unusual punishments, were they?
This is the motherfucker that robbed all you guys and walked them through the streets.
Yeah. If he did that here, he'd be a terrorist. He'd be an Al-Qaeda. He'd be taken to Guantanamo or put in a Supermax prison and paraded in front of the public as a horrible threat if he did that here. And all the idiots and morons in this country would support.
That's why they've got 5 hollow point bullets for every human that lives in America, they've got 5 hollow points waiting for you. At this point, I just saw it.
Yeah, and hollow points are actually banned. Are actually banned by NATO because of how damaging they are to people. Bullets normally travel through your body, and that allows you to have some kind of possibility of healing the wounded, things like that. Hollow points, they basically shatter inside the body, and the reason why they're equipping police with this is because you don't want bullet ricochets, you don't want pass-through like you do in an urban area. If you're going to be shooting somebody, you want the bullet to stop. But the inhumanity of it, trying to dig all these little splinters of broken up bullet out of a person's body, it makes it almost certain that they're going to die if they get shot.
There's a company called Extreme Shock, and their hollow points, when it goes in, not only that it fragments into powder.
Hollow points are even more fucked.
I'm going to throw a block of information at you here. It's going to take me a minute to develop this, so please bear with me, okay? Check this out, okay? Now, the privatized prison system in here in the United States, it set a precedent for a company to have an economic incentive to want to incarcerate people, so they're lobbying and stuff. Well, what we found out was that Sheriff Arpaio in Arizona had offices in Wells Fargo Bank rather than in the city government. Turned out Wells Fargo was financing certain corporations that are imprisoning people, including Latino immigrants, and Sheriff Arpaio is being paid by Wells Fargo, which is in turn being paid by these other companies like G4S and CCA, Corrections Corporation of America, and that other company, GEO, okay? So Sheriff Arpaio is in bed with these private prisons. Well, guess what Sheriff Arpaio is also in bed with? Council for National Policy. A Council for National Policy member supports him. And guess who's privatizing, who privatized prisons in New Mexico? Gary Johnson, who attended the Ron Paul rally. And what does the Council for National Policy connect in with? Alex Jones and the Patriot Movement, Ron Paul and the whole thing. You see, the Patriot Movement, Truther Movement, Jack McLam and all the CNP people, Willis Cardo, Spotlight, they're all connected in with the very thing that is the greatest threat that has been the most responsible for taking away liberty in America.
Now, can I ask you, can you name me a single person that walks the earth today that is in no way responsible whatsoever for any of the tyranny that currently enslaves everybody?
I'm not.
Really? Did you accept? No, here's the thing. By our complicity in every single way and every single day, and I think we can blame our parents and their parents for this as well. Generationally, there's blame here. But when you talk about the direct apparatus and the actual knowingly setting it up, sure, you can claim, oh, I didn't know, I'm not responsible, or whatever.
I was kidding. I think you're right. We're all to blame.
Well, the anonymous man living in Papua New Guinea.
This is the reason why I don't come out. This is the reason why I don't come out and attack other people on my radio show, kind of thing. Unless they're known, you know, New World Order, ruthless scumbags, or whatever, you know, the Rumsfelds, the Rockefellers, the and Rothschilds. You know,
the guys that you know. I mean, New World Order. When you say it, I mean that's a very vague term. But when you say Council for National Policy, these guys, they're fucking doing it, you know. They're fucking on the ground doing this.
Yeah, stuff. Yeah, well, so is the Council on Foreign Relations, so is the Bilderberg Group, so is the Trilateral Commission, so is the Committee for 300, so is PNAC, so is all... What's your point, bro? You know, what are we going to split hairs here? New World Order. It's an eclectic idea of global government and total enslavement. That's what it is.
Stanley Monteith, he's a big player, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. He's a member of the Council for National Policy, yeah.
That's what I thought.
Well, they put out a lot of disinfo and stuff. You know, they put out... The big thing about the CNP directed and Jesuit directed truther radio hosts and stuff is that they steer topic conversation away from the real, like the Anunnaki, ancient extraterrestrials, the ET phenomena today. They say it's all weather balloon. They say it's all, you know, it's all government ops. It's all blue beam. It's all hologram. And they steer away from the important, you know, from the things, you know, that Josh Reeves has been looking into, which is that, you know, if they tell you that Nazis in the Hollow Earth is silly, or if they tell you that, like an Oracle, they do that, if they tell you that it's all just Tavistock, it's all, there's no aliens coming and visiting here, if they tell you that, believe the opposite. That's when you should think that there is Nazis in the Hollow Earth collaborating with aliens, and there have been ancient extraterrestrials here. The very things that they make fun of consistently are the things that are true. I mean, the most moonback crazy.
Well, no. It sounds a lot like you know how Zan, the wise old man, the classic guy. He calls it the 9/11 half truth movement. All right,
yeah.
So figured out 9/11 is an inside job. Sweet ass. Okay, have you figured out that the human race is a cloned slave species? No, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So that's crazy, but your government killing you and stuff like that in order to provoke a world war and a global war on terrorism to subvert all your fucking liberties and all shit like that, that's a part of a massive conspiracy that's been going on for 100 years. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Isn't that the
bitch? You mentioned a single thing about aliens or ancient history. Fuck, mate. You've just all gone off the beaten track.
That is the bitch of it right there.
All right, now that's very true though, because radio show hosts, yeah, no, I am one. Trust me, bro. There's a fuckload of censorship that goes on behind the scenes. A fuckload more truth or infighting than you would ever conceive possible. Most of it never gets public. And I'm being now privy to this.
We aren't affiliated.
I understand audiences. Huh?
I said we haven't been affiliated, but we have been tied into it. You know, it's a poison. It's a nasty tasting poison too.
This comes from the circumstance of war. Okay, when a man is at war, he will see certain things that traumatize him and will damage him, and he becomes a damaged individual when he comes home. The problem with being somebody who's fighting a war against something as evil and arcane and so basically everywhere, such as the New World Order idea, okay, is that you never get any reprieve from your war. We don't have post-traumatic stress disorder. We have current traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
It's not funny.
There's no medication.
It's a good way to put it.
There's no medication. There's no cure. Okay. I don't think any of us will be able to get this monkey off our backs, psychologically speaking, until we get the monkeys off our backs. Physically speaking, all of these things that are holding us down, this entire system needs to come down. However, I don't want it to be violent. I don't want it to be unpleasant. I reckon it could just be like, you know, imagine they declared World War III tomorrow and nobody showed up. You should be like, fuck it, man. I'm going to go get drunk. I'm going to quit the military. It's like, you're sending me into nuclear war. Fuck that.
You know, that's a pretty high probability in the U.S. military. I don't think a lot of people around the world actually know that. It's the big reason why they've been bringing Russian troops down into the U.S. and they've been bringing as many foreigners into the U.S. Military as possible over the last few years, is because the U.S. troops will not fight against Americans. Like, they won't. And, I mean, I was in the fucking army and I know it for a fact. They won't. And it, not only that, but they've also started to build plans that if they get ordered to attack U.S. troops, that they have contingency plans to go into into the areas around them and mobilize the civilians to fight against whatever's going to come. That, you know, the U.S. troops at least won't fight against Americans, but the problem is that they're filling our troops. You know, the U.S. American military is getting Filipinos and Mexicans and South Americans and Russians and all these different groups that aren't Americans are actually
getting foreigners in. Look at it this way. Look at it this way. On the one hand, they've got foreign troops in, so they don't even need the U.S. Troops to kill U.S. citizens. They'll get the foreigners to do it, okay? And on the other hand, the U.S. troops are so indoctrinated that they'll just go off and they won't even know what the hell's going on anyway. They'll just get lied to by their CO, and they'll believe whatever it is and go back to the barracks. The veterans, on the other hand, veterans who are retired, they know different. And I'm personally aware of a number of groups that are popping up in different countries of well-disciplined, well-organized, trained-to-kill veterans who will not see America fall, who will not see Great Britain fall to the New World Order apparatus and become part of the Eurozone and stuff like that. I mean, we've seen a chance of taking the counties back from this this federal bullshit and encroachment by the federal government. The sheriffs are the only ones I feel that are really in a physical elected position to do something about that and tell the federal government to go fuck itself. But it doesn't matter how many shotguns he's got, he ain't going to survive an M16 round through the head, is he? Okay? We can't let it turn into a hot war. We've got to turn it into, Alex Jones is right, this information war and what have you. I don't know what it is. But the whole idea about we're at war and we're doing this really gets to me on a real deep level. Because on the one hand, I see my New Zealand troops going over to Afghanistan and dying in things like a roadside bomb attack and having five New Zealanders come home in fucking caskets inside of a month. And on the other hand, I see all the U.S. troops who are coming home with depleted uranium poisoning from the Middle East and won't get any goddamn help from fucking Medicaid or the Veterans Affairs Office or any of this goddamn shit and being left out in the fucking cold. That shit really hurts me because I see it happening to good people who have a lot of potential and are often very capable of leading great lives. With skills that they had from the military and just simply having them snuffed out and taken away so that some cocksucker can run heroin. It's extraordinary. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if veterans all over the world are so fucking pissed that they arbitrarily turn it into a shooting war and then get all of us killed.
I know, it's a scary situation. That's what they want. I think that's what they want. You know, honestly, I think that's what they want, is for it to get physical, because that's what they're good at. They're good at fighting, and they're good at killing, and that's what they want.
They're not good at negotiating.
Look at Hitler.
Not good at being honest.
Look at Hitler. He was a veteran who felt betrayed by, quote-unquote, the November criminals, you know? Nothing is more dangerous than a veteran who feels that he's been betrayed, but with an obsessive complex of, you know, self-identity complex of national pride, ethnic pride, Volkischheit, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Totally.
Yeah, these things.
Yeah, it's a scary situation. It's a real bad situation. And it seems like, you know, we've talked about it tonight and yesterday. And it's this whole, like, you know, force the Patriot movement into power or have the libertarians take control or something along that line. Or, you know, if Obama isn't going to win, there's going to be martial law and all this. And, you know, it seems like this massive buildup to force a fight. You know, it's like a bully.
Well, you know, I've said this before. It's like this
is picking on you, waiting for you to throw a punch.
No, wait a second. Have you ever seen the movie Shane or heard the Bill Hicks reference about it?
No.
Okay, Jack Palance throws the pistol at the sheep herder's feet.
Yeah.
Pick it up.
I don't want a mister, you'll shoot me.
Pick up the gun.
Oh, come on, mister, I don't want any trouble. I just came into town to get his fort. Name me a country that America has fought that they haven't armed first.
That's good. I gotta go eat something real quick. I'll be back in a few minutes. I gotta step away from the mic. I'll go eat something real quick, okay?
All right.
That's a good one. I'd like to figure out that question, Vinny. I can't come
you
up
see,
with
it's
one
a,
yet.
It's a puzzler! Riddle me this, motherfucker!
Pick up the game.
Oh, so you're saying, are you comparing that to the American people?
No,
I'm comparing that to U.S. foreign policy.
Well, yeah, it's foreign policy, but that might, they're trying to incorporate that into current, you know, interstate policy.
Well, have you noticed
that's a
that when you start treating people, it's like when you start treating people like shit, And there's somebody else, and you're not concerned about them or whatever, it's only a matter of time before you bring that shit home with you.
Fucking A. Yeah. You know, there's 315 million people here in the U.S. right now, and there's about 10 times that many weapons here.
And half of them will give up. Weapons
for every one civilian.
Half of them will take the chip.
There is no fucking chip. And it's all fucking bullshit.
They'll all bow down, man. Half of them will give up and just say, you know what, I'm not going to fight. I'll just let you guys fight. You know?
Yeah. I think they're just going to do it real covert, like, like, you know, like they'll hide them in Pringles or something, and you'll accidentally eat them.
No, it's already.
I'll have mine in my Dorito bags.
Nano level. It doesn't even require it. All you have to do is stand one in front of one of their little cameras, and it'll take a picture of your fucking It'll take a picture of your energy imprint. Every person has.
It's called biometrics.
It's like a fingerprint, except it's your energy imprint. And
biometrics. Yep.
Yeah, they can just like type in the fucking number and be like they can track you. Yeah, there's a lady
and it's
out
only,
of
and it's only yours
Iceland.
As well.
Or no,
the DNA.
There was a fucking NATO representative from. I think it was Iceland that talked about it, but she said that, yeah, this whole idea about chipping people, like, that's just to scare people. Like, she said that we'd already moved past this, like, 5 years ago. And
They've already got us chipped, okay? Yeah. And raise your hand here if you don't have a cell phone.
I don't have a cell phone.
I don't have one.
Two?
I have one.
See? All right. I'm cell phone. You got it around with you. Most people have got it. Okay. Yeah. Tracks you everywhere you go, records everything that you say, databases it through Project Echelon. Boom. They've already chipped you, motherfucker.
There's another project in the U.S. After 9/11, started by the NSA. It was called Nightwind. What's it called? There's another project too. Something wind. But yeah, it tracks everybody in the U.S. as well. It was actually designed by the NSA guy. You know, it worked right there for 30 years from the beginning of NSA to track people, you know, around the world. But then 9/11 happened, and they turned it inwards in the U.S. It's called Nightwind, or fuck, that ain't right. I have it bookmarked somewhere, but yeah, there's another project in the U.S. about that. They track us all.
Yeah,
it's
the one I was talking about was Project Echelon, and this was actually something that a bunch of New Zealanders protested against. You might have been aware of the plowshare activist that broke onto a British Air Force base in the 90s to take ball peen hammers to a bunch of their new Harrier jump jets that are about to be shipped off for the war in the Gulf. And they were ruled in court that it was a lawful action to go and damage property if that property is going to be used to damage innocent people. And, you know, they won the case in court. And in New Zealand, a similar incident happened. We had Waihopai spy base. They had these big, giant domes, radar dishes, stuff like that, right in the middle of, like, New Zealand backside fucking country. And it turns out that all of the communications that are taken in globally, all these different signals, emails, text messages, satellite communications, phone calls, all of that kind of stuff, everything that's basically digital and is moving around is capable of being transmitted, received, picked up, or anything like that. It turns out that it's illegal to spy on your own citizens' communications like that. But it ain't illegal to spy on somebody else's citizens. So what all the countries did is they got together and they created this Project Echelon. So they agreed that they wouldn't spy on their own citizens, but they would spy on each other's citizens and then share their information. And they got everything on everybody, okay? All the cell phone companies, they're required to keep a year's data minimum per SIM card, okay? Downloaded, flagged for analysis, all there. Every text message, every email. Okay, all being totally surveilled. But
on top of that,
let them watch.
They've taken it way further than that, Vinny. They've actually figured out where you're going to be. They figured out how to predict where you're going to be, even when it's like very random. Like, there's a new program that just came out over the last month or so that made headlines that's showing that they can predict even the most random behavior sometimes. And it comes down to like the most minute details. And the only fucking way they'd be able to know those minute details is if they're tracking them. And, you know, I brought it up here a month ago or more that, like, this idea of, like, anonymity, like, especially online, is like, so illusory. Like, it's a delusional. They know every fucking thing about you. And, you just have to accept.
You could get scared about it.
There is no, like, don't.
You could get scared about it.
Don't fool yourself. They know who you are. They know what you do all day. They know what you like. They know what you don't like. They know more about you than you know about you.
I've been a single woman. I've been a single woman for many years, and you know, I have wonderful friends. But you know, I live on my own, and my daughter's off, you know, enjoying her life, and I have grandbabies. But I'm a single woman, and I can take care of myself. I don't worry about these things. I don't worry about my house getting broken into, and I've lived in the same place where...
Well, no, statistically, you're not going to get your house broken into anymore anyway, because the crime rates have dropped so low in the United States and everywhere else. It's just that the government crime's gone way up, so you're not going to have to worry about your house being burgled. You're going to have to worry about your house being fucking foreclosed on.
Right.
I read an article today, 800,000 between 2008 and 2011. 800,000 foreclosures were illegal here in the United States that they found that were just like glaringly illegal. You know, every type of like, you know, investigative mission that goes into like, you know, being foreclosed on and all the rest, 100%, not 99%, 100% of the time it was illegal.
I don't even worry about that either because, you know, scary, it's like, I always say that, you know, some people worry about, and then, you know, it was like, oh my gosh, I guess, you know, what am I going to do? And then less than 24 hours later, someone gave me a free car. I don't know how that worked. But, you know, life will guide me where I need to be. I'm not going to worry about these things.
Do you believe in karma?
I don't know. Yeah. Well, the thing is, you're not supposed to worry about anything, basically, until it's right on your doorstep. And I think that's the human condition, and that's the way we're able to survive all this shit, because ultimately we've managed to push it to the back of our minds until it's unavoidable kind of thing. No. There go. We don't spend our time stressing about shit that isn't happening yet.
No, I think, Vinny, that we're being challenged right now to be more evolved than that, that we're not survivalists, you know, because we're all good at surviving, you know, kind of, but that's not what we're being asked to do. That's not what the system right now is requiring of us. The system right now is requiring more of us than just surviving. We need to start being able to see what's coming, to be able to analyze what's been going on, and being able to proactively do things. And that's an extremely difficult thing for people to do on a regular basis. They can
dare everybody just to have fun and then you know, help people along the way. Dare to be different. Have fun. You know? If you're in that state,
and do that.
And do it all the time. It's great. I mean, yeah, there are problems, and if someone needs some help along the way, I help them. If I have, you know, excess here, have it. I don't worry about those things.
Yeah.
Totally.
But I dare you to have fun for a couple days and see what happens.
Well, you know, I experienced that. When I was in the Army, I used to give away everything. I would give people money and I don't know if any of you have heard much of my Army story, like on the back end anyway. But I'd give people things worth lots of money. And I did not want anything back. And that's like my general sense. You know, I've always been that way. I give people things and I don't want anything back. You know, and, you know, you were talking to earlier, Vinny, about once you get into a position of control, that it's completely corrupting. Well, I actually experienced that for almost 2 years. And there's only one night where I don't know, I didn't test that theory, but the theory was proven, I guess, anyway. And it was that way. Like, you know, I had a group of people that were just locked to me. And I wasn't about the system or about, you know, it was a big, you know, we partied for 2 years. You know, my brothers are going down to the beach and all this stuff. Well, I helped people, and people couldn't understand that I just generally wanted to be a nice person and wanted to help them. And I didn't expect anything back. People would try to give me things or try to do things. And, you know, I mean, I'd accept it if they were just being nice and they were just being human. But it was another thing when they were just trying to give me something or do something like that. You know, it was a different thing. And it just fucking threw everybody off. It just, like, I mean, it's not in my nature to take things from people. It's not in my nature to dominate somebody like that, even when I do have the power there to do so.
I am.
You know?
I have something to say about this, actually.
Go ahead.
You know, the people who like, when you, people who get in power and become kind of ruthless and brutal, sometimes, like, they can't really be blamed. Like, right. Exactly. Right, exactly. You're right, you're right.
Yeah, damn right, Rick.
But yeah. I'm just speaking from a chat room, like, because I host a show and I host a platform, and I get people, you know, I've got people who criticize me for legitimate reasons, but then I've gotten people who criticize me for bullshit reasons. And some of the people, the worst people are the people who criticize you for bullshit reasons. They don't just criticize, they attack. I've had people who threaten to hack my computer before. I've had people threaten me and stuff. You know, with things. You know what I mean? And,
well, fuck, man. I mean, look at what happened.
I love being threatened.
No. Rick went through it on a very extreme case here a year ago, and there's no joke about it. Like, you know, death threats and fucking real. It was real. I mean, it's, you know what I mean? That's what he's saying, kind of.
I've since become on friendly terms with the person that he comes in
the street and doing radio, kind of like covering protests and shit all over the place, been roughed up by cops. Okay, I've earned my fucking stripes, right? So
yeah.
If anybody criticizes me and said you haven't done this or that, they got nothing. Okay, and I know that they got nothing. For example, a guy from Zeitgeist, they had to create another new email address and then come in to create another account so that they could attack you again, and that you can prevent by just going block again, and it fucks them off because that's what they really want to do. They want
Joe, and I'm like, no, that's fucked up. There's a problem with that. We got a problem when you're talking about
fucking being professional and act like a dick, basically. But what I will not tell you yourself with that responsibility that should be everybody else's. I mean, have you ever lived in a house? All of these things called holidays. Holidays, okay? They can actually afford to go away and stuff like that. Truth is, don't get fucking holidays half the time, bro. They exterminated blacks and the retarded and the disabled and the so on and so forth. Anybody who was a gypsy or who basically, if you weren't fucking white with fucking blue eyes and fucking blonde hair and a fucking Nazi, you might wind up going into the death camps if you start causing any kind of problems, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there were heaps of people went there, heaps of people died there. However, you have a look at other places where heaps of people have been exterminated. Like in China, for example, where they exterminated 60 million people or something like that. There's no taboo topic there. Anybody can talk about that. Anybody can revisit it. Anybody can wonder whether or not well, for 7 years in a biblical sense of the word.
Well, I agree. I agree with you in every sense of the word, except that it was real. The killing was real. They really did kill as many Jews as they said they did, but they probably killed them with starvation, with guns. Okay. First of all, about the pellets thing, if you look at
See, here's the thing. How can we quantify it? I mean, have you seen the charts with the numbers of people killed?
No, I haven't.
Has anybody?
Well, the, 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 the,
They say 40 million.
More of the infirm and the different people than they did Jews. You know, that's even just like.
It's almost mathematically impossible.
They killed more. You know,
here's the thing.
They killed this many.
You get called a Holocaust denier for even talking about this or even entertaining the thought. Okay, so we just want to kind of put that in the bag right here and just say that if you're going to accuse us of being anti-Semitic, can I ask you a question? What percentage of Jews practicing Judeo followers and all of that kind of stuff who pray to Yeshua and all of that jazz? How many of them are actually Semitic? And it turns out it's only about 10%. Okay, so if I'm anti-Semitic, man, I'm really, really racist because I'm racist against 10%
Let me say something about gas, okay? If you look at the way our gas chambers work, the United States gas chamber, which have been outlawed, but in the 60s and 70s, they killed people in the gas chamber. They had pellets, and what they would do is they would drop the pellets into sulfuric acid, which would cause a reaction, which would cause the gas to be released. I assume that it's probably most likely that was the same method used in Germany. I mean, knowing from Project Paperclip and IG Farben and the corporate connection and then the connection to our private prison system, you can totally see how, you know, we probably got a lot of our gas chambers from Germany. I mean, I don't know, or maybe they got it from us.
Hold on, here's one element I want to put you on here as well. There was a lice epidemic during the war as well. And you know what Zyklon B was manufactured for? Delousing. And they had lots of rooms in the death camps where they chucked everybody's clothes in and then chucked all the pellets of Zyklon B all over it to kill the goddamn lice.
Zyklon B is just cyanide. It's just, I think it's either potassium or hydrogen cyanide. You put it in sulfuric acid, it's a pellet, put it in sulfuric acid, it will release the gas. That's how they did it here. I mean, it's prussic acid. Prussic is blue.
See, I'd like to know.
See, I'm an artist, I work with...
Why they can't pull residue off of the showers, though? You know, guys actually gone around to these death camps, allegedly, and pulled, you know, samples off these showers where everybody claims that these Jews were gassed to death.
It's organic, and it fucking...
No, that's not true at all, because there are rooms and things like that with the blue staining that's typical of Zyklon B. You test them even today, way off the fucking chart. It doesn't go away. It's permanent shit.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. It's gas. Maybe,
you know, I mean,
I just want to know what the hell happened.
How the Jews have always been kind of like the front men of the New World Order. Like, everybody always blames the Jews, and it has been for a long time.
Let's not forget.
Maybe we'll play like how fucking Silverstein got away with it. You know, it's like, kind of, you know, play into the same idea, is what I'm saying.
Well, it's about wiping out competition, okay? Because, let's say, for example, you've got 50 million Jews. Let's say you've got 10 million Jews in Europe or something like that, and you wanted to exterminate 6 million of them, and you want to confiscate all their wealth, and you want to put it into the hands of, say, the Nazi government or something like that. Who funded the Nazi government? Well, it turns out it was the Rothschild family, okay? Oh, and also the U.S. government. The U.S. government, during the Depression, gave, I think, close to $1 trillion of the United States gross national product in the 20s and 30s, actually went to rebuilding Adolf Hitler's Germany.
I don't know. I mean, do you understand that the Rothschild family, that they aren't really fucking, like, under a flag? I mean, do you get that?
No, they're under a shield.
You go way back. You go back about 100 years or so. It shows that the Rothschilds took over about, you know, this 6-7 major Western countries through the children of fucking the main Rothschild, it's the famous quote that says, you know, I don't give a shit what your rules are, your laws are, what you know, system is. If I control your money, I rule you. You know.
Well, they've figured that out since the Battle of Waterloo.
That's what the guy said. Well, it was all his seven children that did that, and he took over the Western world. So yeah,
let me
heard of the Rothschilds tied into a country. I think you're a little
no,
off.
No, no. What are you talking about, bro? You think World War II only affected one country? Hello.
No.
What are you talking about?
The Rothschilds were most certainly massive benefactors of a lot of it, and kind of behind a lot of it.
Okay, you know, I ask you something? Does the Rothschilds own the military-industrial complex? And was there a hell of a lot of military and industrial and complex shit happening during World War II? Yes, there was. So who benefited from it? Fuck the military-industrial complex. Who owns that? Rothschilds. I think that's pretty straightforward.
Right.
I wasn't contradicting you there.
Let me come in and say something.
I wasn't contradicting you there.
Something I'm going to add.
I'm just saying, like, in the end, it isn't about the flag. And it was like New World Order forward. It's like everybody always tries to wave the flag, saying that it's like this part of it or that part of it, you know, this country, that country. But it's the Rothschilds.
They have no allegiance. They're not the end all be all.
Can I come in?
Go ahead.
But I'm an artist, okay, and I work with, and anybody who works with oil paints, and I know oil paints, knows that blues and greens are the most poisonous, dangerous ones because they have cyanide in them. There's a paint called Prussian blue. It's a very dark blue that I use. I mean, Prussian blue, it has cyanide. The blue color comes from cyanide. It's prussic acid. That was the other name for Zyklon. That's what Zyklon B really was, is prussic acid. And, you know, maybe they put it in a bait. I don't know how they did it, but they probably chemically reacted it. You know, IG Farben made this stuff, and they're connected to a lot of U.S. companies. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think there's some manufactured evidence probably put out there. You know, I bet maybe they deliberately did this, you know, where they made the gas chambers look fake so that people would deny the... I think there's a plan from the... I think that, okay, the fact that they're making it illegal to deny the Holocaust, what does that do? Well, you tell someone not to do something, what are they going to do? They're going to do it all the more. You tell people not to use drugs, what are they going to do? They're going to use drugs. See, I think the establishment is a conspiracy. I think the establishment is trying to get... They want people to deny the Holocaust. That's why they want to make these people into martyrs. That's why they're arresting people and stuff, you see? More people, the more you tell someone not to do something, the more legitimate it really... And then people think, oh, this must be really legitimate then, because, you know, the Holocaust denial must be really legitimate then. You know, because why are they suppressing it, right? Well, that's the psychology they're employing. See, I'm saying that's more evidence that it's actually real. The Holocaust was not fake. It was real because, just by the fact that they're outlawing it, because they're trying to, it's like...
But you're confusing physical evidence with theory, okay? What you've got is a theory there that the Holocaust is real, but you don't actually have the evidence and you haven't gone to the places to sort it out. People have done this, and... They've come out on mainstream television and shown their findings and things like that, and of course they're not listened to. They're shouted down, and in fact many people who've gone and done that research have gone missing. In my experience, when people go missing after revealing information that's controversial, it's a conspiracy.
I see.
Yeah.
Well,
okay. Here's my argument against both of you. One of you is arguing the conspiracy, one of you is arguing the evidence, and my argument is the point.
I argued all
that,
three.
That is inappropriate. What I'm saying is like, is it any worse that they only killed 2 million instead of 6 million? You know, I mean, it's a fucking
That's
horrific
not the
thing.
Point.
You know, that's not the point.
What we're talking about is the suppression of alternative speech, and it specifically pertains to the state of Israel. Nothing else, okay? You name me another country that gets $3 billion worth of weapons from the United States every year out of the U.S. taxpayers' pocket. You name me another country that has an organization like AIPAC or CPAC or any of those other bullshit organizations that basically say anybody who questions Israel is going to die and blah, blah, blah. These people are psychotic, you know,
well,
that run that state over there.
Egypt was getting, Egypt is getting, or was getting, I don't know if they are now with the new regime in place, but Egypt was getting an insane amount of money from us.
Not
as well.
Not that much.
Yeah, yeah, and that's because Mubarak was the result of a CIA plant or something like that. And it's just basically like this. The Middle East is the hot spot where basically if you're not one a dictator, okay, that's financed by the U.S., you are going to be invaded and you will be taken out. Okay, so you'll be like a Gaddafi or an Ahmadinejad or a Saddam Hussein or whatever. You look into what these guys really did. You look into what these guys really did, and the only thing that I've found is common amongst countries that basically get demonized by U.S. foreign policy or any mainstream mass media kind of thing, is the private central banking system does not exist in those countries, nor does debt. Those countries don't have a Rothschild bank, and they're not in debt. They get invaded,
just like the Bank of Beirut. Yes,
you're fucking exactly.
Lebanon.
Go ahead, Frankie.
It's like the Bank of Beirut in Lebanon. They have their own central bank there.
Yes. Yeah.
If they're not for the U.S. Foreign policy, well, they're going to treat you like shit. They're going to use everything, the media, radio waves, to make you look like a terrorist state. And then he hit it right on the bat, man. He hit it good.
Yeah. No, yeah. No, that's exactly right. There was a list that came out 6 years, 7 years ago that listed every country in the world pretty much that had any kind of power, and even a couple that didn't have shit for power. And the only common denominator between any of them was that they had nationalized central banks.
Back on the Holocaust thing, and just to preface it as well, my producer is Jewish. Okay, some of my donors are Jewish, but they're not Zionists.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the difference. I love Jews because they're fucking nice people, man. Just like I love pretty much anybody. Most people, wherever you go in any country, you get broke down on the side of the road, chances are somebody will actually stop. It doesn't matter what country you're in or what language they speak. People in general are very, very good. However, there's that 4% of total psychopaths, 4 or 5% of psychopaths in the population who get inordinate amounts of power through banking and general other forms of scumbaggery. And what I want to do is get out of that system. I don't want to be part of it anymore. It doesn't assist me in my endeavors. It is not a good part of my life. It is something that makes my life harder in every single day and way. You know what I'm saying? And I feel the solution to all of this is usually quite simple. How did all this debt get made up? Oh, well, they just created it out of thin air. Okay. Well, why don't we just pretend that there's no debt anymore?
Man.
Problem solved.
Yeah, it does. Well, it's immediate physical reaction, I think, would come from it. But, I mean, if we could actually, like, clarify it in a very, you know, articulate way to people, to show people that, the world would change.
Well, the thing is, here's another thing that I'm getting sick of, the 9/11 truth movement and everybody else, whether they're socialists or it doesn't matter. Everybody does this to a certain extent, and I really hate it. We need more people. We need more numbers. We need this, that, and the other. What you're saying is you're not enough, okay, and that you need more people to do this, that, and the other. What I've found is an immutable truth, being an on-the-street activist and having networked with many, many people who most would never dream of interviewing and what have you, is it works like this. If you think you need more people, it means you're not going to get anything done because you'll spend all your time worrying what other people are doing, what other people are thinking, instead of getting the fucking job done.
Yeah, you know.
And it only takes 1%.
I want 1%
of the population.
Fucking you
hold on. I just want to finish this point. Okay. 1% of the population managed to suppress the entirety of China under Chairman Mao's leadership at the barrel of the gun. 1% of the population managed to enslave the other 99%. Okay? Conversely, that's a revolution, mind you. Conversely, 3% of the U.S. population were aware and actively supporting the resistance against King George in the American War of Revolution. And they fucking beat them, didn't they? 3% of the population. That's 3 out of 100. You don't need numbers. You don't need a cast of thousands. You need creativity. And you need the ability to have backbone and not back down. That's all you need, and that's all we've ever needed. But the problem is, instead of growing a spine, we have asked other people to put their spines in harm's way for our sake.
Yeah.
That's got to stop. We've all got to take personal responsibility for everything that we're doing. All I need is me.
They used a gypsum canister to absorb the Cyclone B, and they put it in these airtight canisters. That's how they... It was made in 1920. The United States used it, too, to de-lice Mexican clothing on trains and stuff. Yeah, the United States used... the Farm Securities Administration, they used cyanide gas and Cyclone B at the New Orleans quarantine station during the 1930s. Basically to
disinfect... Because of the massive lice outbreak?
Yeah, in the United States, yeah, but it became the... They experimented in Germany. They experimented first on Russians, and then they used it on Jews. They killed 1.2 million people in the gas chambers. Now, the other 5 million or whatever, they killed probably with either starvation or guns or whatever. You know,
I mean, what gas chambers are you referring to?
Oh, the German ones, the Nazi ones, in Auschwitz and Birkenau. They used
which. Because Auschwitz didn't have gas facilities, they had cookers, and they had large barracks and things like that where they held the prisoners in staging areas. But they weren't any gas chambers or anything of the like at Auschwitz.
Oh, wait a minute! I just remembered something. I got to read something. Okay, hold on a second. There's some evidence that somebody in our chat room brought forward. And I got it. Let me see if I can find it here. Okay. I know where it is. Let me get it. Let me grab it. It may not have been the gas that killed them. It may have been the ovens that killed them. They may have been burned alive in a Jesuit sacrifice, Jesuit style sacrifice. This is from John in the UK.
May have been.
Well, it's time for a joke then to lighten the mood. What's the difference?
You haven't been able to figure it out. You know, I can understand why people say it wasn't 6 million that died. I can understand why people are saying that.
The thing is, they weren't there.
Isn't like, you know, 50 years of research into it shows that, you know, we're still using mays and maybes, and that's how it might have happened. Kind of, you know, I can understand. You know, I mean, I still say it's horrific. I don't care if it was 6 million or 1 million. You know, it's still horrific.
I don't care if it's one.
I'm not going to discount that
murder's murder,
or validate them by saying only because it was only a million, then I guess they weren't that bad. You know what I mean? I mean, I think that's what they're trying to push.
In any way, Ryan, did anybody here in any way say that the Nazis were good people because they only killed such and such million Jews?
Well, ask fucking Josh Reeves that, or Celtic Rebel, or, you know, so many others that are pushing this shit right now, that are pushing the Nazi agenda, and
they're card-carrying fascists.
You might expect.
Because they're card-carrying fascists, bro, okay? They don't give a fuck about facts. They don't give a fuck about human life. They don't give a fuck about equality. All they give a fuck about is their goddamn New World Order in their own way, Shepard, so they can walk around and goose-step to their heart's content. They don't give a fuck
Let me read this from John in the UK. You
know? It's about human life. If anybody threatens human life, they are an enemy. They are an enemy of humanity. If anybody tries to cover up the fact that they've murdered people in any way, shape, or form, enemy of humanity. And anybody who tries to investigate things and ask questions, on the other hand, and they haven't killed anybody, they're not an enemy of humanity.
Let me read this. This is from John in the UK. It won't be long.
Cheers.
I tried to post a picture there of a furnace used in the death camps. I found out these furnaces were used to burn the bodies in a ritual sacrifices that the Jesuit priests that oversaw the SS carried out. The word Holocaust means fire sacrifice. The gassing of the people of Zyklon B merely knocked them unconscious. Then they were burnt alive in those furnaces. of establishing unlawful enterprise for the purpose of crime, 1920-1945, that Archbishop Pacelli, later Pope Pius XII, and the Jesuit order under the control of Superior General Volodymyr Ledochowski did help form the Deutsche Arbeiterpartei, German Workers' Party, abbreviated DAP, into the National Socialist German Workers' Party, NSDAP, also known as the Nazi Party, as instructed Adolf Hitler, that the initial purpose of the Nazi Party, as formed by the Catholic Church, was one, to establish a pro-Catholic political party capable of defeating its opposition and gaining control of government, two, establish a concordat between the Catholic Church and the whole of Germany, guaranteeing a massive financial pipeline and compensation for losing the Papal States, and three, the elimination of all opposition, including social reform, democratic-minded groups, especially Protestants, Orthodox Christians, communists, and ethnic Jews. Then Archbishop Pacelli, later Pope Pius XII, did mentor Hitler to join the DAP, did manage to form him to report to him regularly at least each month, sometimes weekly, until Pacelli's appointment of Vatican Cardinal Secretary of State in 1929, and did provide all the financial support means for Hitler's rise to chairman of the NSDAP in 28 July 1921. Furthermore, that Archbishop Pacelli did use the gold brought into Germany in 1917 to help fund a rapid expansion of the Nazi Party, including the First Reform as a paramilitary organization in 1921, of establishing an unlawful enterprise for the purpose of crime, that Archbishop Pacelli, later Pope Pius XII, and instructions from Superior General Volodymyr Ledochowski did instruct Adolf Hitler in 1921 to... Okay, I've already read that. Okay, so basically, yeah, you know, it was a Jesuit sacrifice. It was a fire. There's a lot more I need to read. I'll have to do this on a future show, but I'm going to get more, study more, research this more. But basically,
see, and again, this is the problem. You don't have source documents. This was something that these Holocaust deniers brought up, and I thought this was very, very interesting. Is that all of the things that we are told about World War II, from start to finish, whether it be Pearl Harbor or the Reichstag fire or anything, it's all been a lie. Yet for some reason, we think that this one can't be in any way, shape, or form. We think that all the information we've got it in, you know, it's obvious it's exactly 6 million and they killed him in exactly this way. What makes you think that? I mean, okay. Pearl Harbor was staged, so was the attack on the German radar station. So we've got false flags after false flags, and the first casualty of every war, as far as I know, is the truth. So here's the thing, and somebody in the chat room has come up with something very poignant here. Palestine currently is a death camp, okay?
Oh, I agree,
by Jews.
I agree.
Every single day. The Jews can exterminate the Palestinians, and you can't criticize them, otherwise you're anti-Semitic. You see what I'm saying? Now, we're God's chosen people.
Well, that's what the Holocaust...
kill you and exterminate you and you...
That's what the Holocaust deniers are there for. That's what their purpose is for, is so that you cannot criticize Israel, see? And you know, that's why they put them there, these Nazi guys out there in the truth movement, because it's guilty by association.
No, and also, those fucks in the truth movement who are saying, Jews, 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 they're going to get us all tarred with that brush, bro. We're all going to be fucking Holocaust deniers and Jew haters, according to the eyes of the public, as soon as the media gets wind of all
of
this bullshit, man.
That's the plan.
They really need to demonize us and fuck us all.
That's the plan. You're exactly right. That's what I've been saying. Okay, that's why, yeah, I've been exposing these twits.
Yeah, we have discussed that topic at least very much so. But
I don't like those guys anyway. I mean, personality wise.
Let me finish what I was saying there.
Personality wise.
You're also highlighting another point, is that it seems like me and Rick and us have been maybe selectively a little bit selective about what we see about this stuff, because we don't want to be Holocaust deniers. You know what I mean? And so, I don't think we've actually looked into it very deeply. We've actually left it alone.
But I didn't either.
We've highlighted,
I just watched a couple of videos on
other stuff. We've highlighted all these other elements of it that show that there's massive fucking holes in the story. But one part of the story that we've left alone is the whole Holocaust thing, and I think it's like I was trying to bring up, or at least this is my argument in my head, anyway, is that I don't care. It's not, that's a fucked up thing to say. It's not like I don't care. But what I'm saying is, it's like 6 million, 2 million, 3 million, 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 million. I mean, they fucking murdered people on a massive scale. And I don't want to argue about the number of it. You know what I mean? And that's where I think we kind of
coming back to the same point again. Off of
it. But you know, you're kind of highlighting it to us that, you know, maybe it's important for us to just fucking don't do that. You know, we should look as in depth.
I disagree. I think we should talk about it openly and honestly. Try to show people the difference between somebody who's a serious researcher and somebody who's just a Jew hater.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
No, yeah, absolutely. I know, I'm realizing it now. And I'm hearing you, and you're fucking laying out some real points. And it's like, you know, there's some points in what you're saying here that has relevance to a few of the other things that we've talked about. You know, that they could add more credence to it and more validity. And it's the only reason we haven't done that is because we've avoided this topic a little bit. We've kind of purposefully
This topic got dumped on me once. You know, and a listener said, "Have you heard about Holocaust denial?" And me, I'm kind of flippant. I'm just like, I don't care about being judged or persecuted. I've been judged and persecuted my entire life for many fucking reasons. But I just went, oh, okay, well, sweet ass Holocaust denial. Let's see what these people are talking about. And I'm watching this 1990s thing about this young guy who went around to the death camps, and he took his own footage, he took his own samples of the things, and this is some of the information that I've been talking about tonight as well. And of course, everybody laughs at him, and of course, Jewish people who did go to the death camps, and thing is, no Holocaust denier has ever denied that there was a Holocaust. No Holocaust denier ever denied that there were death camps. What they've and they've never actually gone through denial. What they've come up with is questions and inaccuracies in the official story and attempting to find some answers. So, is somebody who is looking for answers a denialist?
No. A denialist is somebody who says the Holocaust never happened. There are radio shows who say that. That was totally fake. It never happened. That's a Holocaust denier. Somebody's questioning it's not a Holocaust. That doesn't automatically make you a Holocaust denier. No.
Yeah, exactly. Now, those people who are saying the Holocaust never happened, they never went to fucking Germany to look at the death camps themselves, did they? No, they didn't. They sat in their goddamn cushy office in fucking Wyoming or some shit, sucking back Bud Light and smoking some cigarettes and then going out in their pickup truck trying to, I don't know, shoot black people on the side of the road for sport or some shit, you know?
You don't have to be just of Americans like that. Come on, though.
There are Americans like that.
Only one in a hundred.
They exist.
There goes our Wyoming contingency.
Well, you know, folks, it's about 4 hours, 16 minutes into the show. I typically end the show about 4 hours, the 4 hour mark. So I was going to wrap it up. But we get some closing thoughts. All of you guys are welcome to come back for any show in the future. Enjoy the conversation.
Yes, Vinny, I really enjoy listening to you, and I love the humor. When you're looking at dark stuff, I think humor is the only way you can actually not let it stick.
I'll close by saying this. I like laughing a lot more than I like doing sit-ups or crunches. And so this has been informative, and you know, I agree with you, Fox. It's difficult subject matter at times, but you know, to add a little bit of humor to it certainly is advantageous.
And I just want to say, no hard feelings, Vinny. I'm all in the good spirit of good debate, and you're welcome back anytime.
How could there be hard feelings when you're such an awesome dude, bro?
Well, thank you.
It was a really good discussion. I was really, really glad to see you come over and say hi, Ben.
All I need is a little bit of notice, eh? I mean, invite me whenever, because I'm so busy that basically if somebody wants me, they just have to come and ask, and I'll just say, yes, okay, I'll drop whatever I'm doing and I'll come to you. But for me to be part of my workload to ask people to come on their shows, it's a bit much.
Well, I really appreciate you coming, Vinny. It was a good discussion. I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot.
Yeah. And I've recorded my end of it as well, so I'll upload that to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com and to YouTube as well. So yeah, there you go. You'll be on my archive page after all.
Awesome.
Cool.
Awesome.
And for the Vinny Eastwood listeners, it is honeyradiance.org. I always just hit the bookmark. I always forget. But anyway, so yeah, honeyradiance.org.
.com will take you there too, though. .com is my link to my .org, so it's honeyradiance.org. So.
And the same way the other way, because yeah, Rick will put it up through our archives and... Yeah, we'll be able to find Vinny Eastwood.
And one of these days, I'll tell you what Honey Radiance is. It's a character I created, so I'll tell you all about it.
All right.
Vinny, before you leave, can you do your intro?
Which intro? Is this the intro to my show?
Yeah.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go... friggin' nuts. Broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. Fluoridated in Fukushima, irradiated, and everybody has a part time job as an incandescent light bulb by order of the Prime Minister to help the economy.
That's great.
I've always listened to your shows, and they're always great, man.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I am pretty great.
And Herbsta, if you're still listening, stay tuned, because when the show's done, I'm gonna play the final episode of Roger Waters' autobiography and the follow up to the final cut, the pros and cons of hitchhiking. So, when the show's over,
yeah. Well, I hope all you guys over in the Vinny Eastwood come over and start listening.
I hope everybody
over here on Honey Radiance starts going over and listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, because I think we're kindred spirits, and we need to start working together on some of this stuff. Fuck all the bullshit and the infighting, as was brought up earlier, because it's all about getting it out to everybody, and
it's all about priorities, bro. What do you prioritize, making friends or making enemies?
Damn right.